Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Stocks for beginners.
Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorized reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
The first thing you have to start doing is really thinking and exploring where these emotions are coming from. Try to understand what they're there to protect you from. And then accepting that that's what they're there for. They have positive intent. Like, I tend to want to move my stops when trade starts to go in my direction. What's the positive intent there? The positive intent is to try to protect myself from loss.
Hi, and welcome back to Stocks for Beginners. I'm Phil Muscatello, and this is holiday season for most of us around the world. And so I'm welcoming to the podcast an old friend, Kyle Hedman from, well, it used to be Two Bulls in a China Shop, but has now been rebranded and renamed to Band of Traders. Is that correct? Hello, Kyle.
That is correct, yes. And that was a whole big old fiasco. I think we went through two name changes in 24 hours because a listener caught the episode where we were discussing the name change and suggested a much better one.
Oh, what was the first what was the suboptimal name change?
We ended up landing on True Trading because the idea was like we were trying to show like what the real, you know, trading life was really about, like the kind of things that nobody really talks about, the struggles, the lessons that you have to learn every day. But then when he came with that one, is like, yeah, this should incorporate the idea of like including everybody. And yeah, it kind of does. I guess
Band of Traders, basically, we're talking here now, aren't we? Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of got a bit of a Jimi Hendrix feel to it. That's what I'm feeling. Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking more like
Band of Gypsies, you know.
I was thinking more like Band of Brothers, but yeah.
Jimi Hendrix in the military. Well, Jimi Hendrix was in the army, wasn't he? Something like that.
I think he was, but I don't think it was by choice.
Yeah, I think he just ended up using it as an excuse to keep rehearsing guitar. Always a good thing. Yeah, for someone like Hendrix, I guess. Look, let's just start. Like I said, this is a totally unprepared episode. We're recording before Christmas. We are going to be releasing this sort of early January, so you'll be hearing this in early January. So we might talk about Christmas, we might not talk about it, but I'm here sweltering in Sydney. The weather's getting nice and warm and summery, but I'm assuming it's not quite the same where you are.
It's actually been decently warm, but I think what we consider warm and what you consider warm might be a little bit different.
Yeah. Oh, God. Are we going to have to start talking between Celsius and Fahrenheit as well?
I was just trying to figure out if I was going to – I just double it. That's close enough.
Oh, okay. We had a day the other day which was, what, 38 degrees Celsius? So, no, it'd be more than double.
Wow. That's pretty hot.
Oh, no, we get hotter.
Isn't that?
We get much hotter than – yeah, we do.
I'm trying to think of what the hottest I've been in. I used to live in Phoenix, Arizona, and honestly, we had like 120s, but the conversion to that is probably what, like 40s in Celsius?
I guess so. I don't know. Okay, what I do know is 32 degrees Fahrenheit is zero Celsius.
Okay, and 48.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. 48. Okay.
Yeah. So 38 is 100. Yeah, 100 degrees. That's pretty spicy. Do you get humidity out there too, or is it just
very high humidity? Yeah, we're subtropical here in Sydney.
That makes it way worse. That sounds like Houston weather. Ugh. It feels like you just got out of the shower all day long.
Tell us about the Band of Traders. How's it been going this year? And let's talk about you a little bit personally, you're trying to use this opportunity to learn about trading stocks and options and so forth. Tell us a bit about yourself and why you're doing it and how you're doing it and what you're learning.
Well, it started out with stocks about 3 years ago, and I think we were dabbling with options when we first crossed paths with you. Lately, it's been a lot of diving into futures and trying to learn and understand those. Before the rebrand, we did a really great kind of like an intro into futures tradings with some other established traders. And we kind of like the feel of that, the structure of that. We've done some roundtables in the past where we get some experts and some newbie traders to get to ask like the questions that they want to ask. And so that's kind of been like the feel for the new show, where we're trying to just open it up to get as many people involved to ask those questions that, you know, sometimes you feel kind of stupid asking them. What actually is an options contract? Like, you can't just pop into a room and ask that without feeling I don't belong here. But, you know, we all have those questions. We all have those things that we want to know. So we're just trying to give people a chance to be able to, you know, be a part of those communities, part of those discussions, to share the things they're working on and get feedback from other people. Because the more eyes you get on stuff, the more people you can bounce ideas on, just the better you end up forming it for yourself, right?
So what's it like trying to control expectations? Because a lot of people, when they approach the idea of trading in options or stocks, you know, they think they're going to become masters of the universe. They're going to quickly become, you know, make lots and lots of money. How have you responded to that?
I've just passed on a guy who requested to be interviewed after looking over his website and seeing exactly that. Grow your account from 4K to a million in 5 years. You can do it. It can be done. But like, if that's what you're focusing on, if you're focusing on results, as far as like P&L goes, you're not going to make your decision-making process is already compromised, because that shouldn't be what plays in. Like, good results are a result of good risk management. So we've been trying to shift. I shouldn't say trying. Trying means you're fighting. You're not doing. Our focus has been on shifting everything to process related. Am I following my process? Am I entering as according to my plan? Am I following my take profit strategies? Am I executing the way I said I was going to? And if you can say that at the end of the day, then the P&L is going to reflect that. That's been the biggest shift over the last year, I think.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you talked about, someone who wanted to come on the podcast and you checked out their website and because I've realized doing this, my stock market investing program is I can just fill it up with trading companies, trading ideas. Yeah. I'm not even sure what the generic term is for these kind of things, but it's just people who want to just sell their course in trading. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're making their money. And this is the first time I've talked about trading in ages because I've banned traders on the podcast. Apart from you, because we can talk honestly about this as well, and we can talk about the struggles and that there are ways of doing this, but it's not a path for everyone. You know, really, you've got to get your money act together, have your most of your money in, you know, property or bonds or long-term ETFs or managed funds, or
pay off your credit card debt first.
Yeah, pay down your credit card. All those really sensible things, you know. Sorry, I said managed funds. They're actually mutual funds in the United States. I should just correct myself there.
Like, really, that's something that Eric Smolinski harps on a lot. I've done quite a few collaborations with him.
I've had Eric on the podcast as well.
Yeah, Eric's phenomenal. Yeah. And his big advice to someone who's starting out is to spend that time saving while you're learning. You know, paper trade and save and save and save until you're ready to deploy it.
Do you find paper trading helpful? Has that idea worked in trying to hone the kind of trading methodology you might be using?
I find it to be very helpful, yes, between paper trading and backtesting. Paper trading just kind of gives you a bit of a feel of what it's like to sit through a trade. You get to kind of, it makes you pay a little more attention to it. You can see how it reacts intraday, whereas if you're doing backtesting, you're kind of usually just looking at like, okay, I would have entered here, I would have closed here. You don't get to actually like sit through the moves in that scenario. Now, the downside is that with the paper trade, obviously there's nothing tied to it. There's no risk. So it's really hard to work on those emotions that come when you're sitting through a drawdown, or when the trade is going your way and you're like, oh, it's coming up on my take profit. Should I try to squeeze a little bit more out of this, or should I just go ahead and get paid here now? So like, those are the kinds of things that paper trading is like the next step to help you get to that point. You almost have to like live trade stuff after you've done, you know, the proving of the edge, just to make sure that you can actually recreate those results forward testing.
How do you find the psychology working on you? Because, of course, once it's real money involved, and like you say, you know, it's going up. Can I get more profits? It's going down. Should I kill myself?
Has it worked for me? Not the way I'd like it to. Like, I still fall into those traps, but I think the difference is that nowadays I'm aware of what's going on. Like, I can pinpoint it, like, something doesn't feel right today. What is going on? Oh, I'm fearful. Why am I fearful? Oh, I just took two losses. Now I'm going to be, you know, questioning everything and not thinking quite as clearly as I was before. So just having the awareness of some of those things, I think, is really helpful to be able to key you in on, like, yeah, maybe I need to take a step back and recenter for a minute.
You also briefly alluded to risk management as being an important part of this. How do you approach risk management?
I think risk management is the most important part of everything when it comes to trying to actively trade or even with your investments. You need to know what your acceptable losses are, how much you're willing to risk on every trade, and it needs to be an amount that you can actually let go of when you're actually putting that trade on. Some people may say my plan calls for $500, but if you're constantly thinking about, like, that's my car payment, becomes a little bit different when you're throwing that on there. So I always hear people say, like, if the risk is too much, like, that's a good sign to size down. Cut your size in half and see if you can stomach that a little bit better. As far as, like, overall, like, you should have a plan that involves, like, your risk per trade. You should have a plan that involves your risk per day, your risk per week. And then what you do when those happen, when those situations hit. If I hit my max daily drawdown, what do I do to respond from that? What's my recovery plan? If I hit a weekly drawdown, how long do I shut down? And do I need to go back and revisit my strategies? Do I need to double check and make sure everything's still within tolerances? It should be probably the most well-defined part of your plan, I would think.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Are you looking for unbiased, in-depth market insights? Deep Knowledge Investing is dedicated to providing conflict-free, well-researched stock ideas. Gary Brode is a 30-year Wall Street hedge fund veteran. Turn to the good side. He's dedicated to providing you with independent and timely market commentary. Deep Knowledge Investing is supported by a large, successful, and highly engaged board of advisors who provide expert advice and insights in a variety of fields and industries. Gary appears regularly on this podcast, so you can check out his insights for yourself and see if he's the right guy for you. Receive 50% off a Deep Knowledge Investing subscription by using the promo code STOCKSFORBEGINNERS50, that's 50. By using this promo code, you can subscribe for 6 months for only $100 or check it out for a month for only $25. That's deepknowledgeinvesting.com and use the promo code STOCKSFORBEGINNERS50. By using this code, you'll be helping to support this podcast. Deep Knowledge Investing, helping you to beat the market. Why do you put yourself through this?
It's a good question. I think it's just because I love the challenge of it. Like, every day is different. You don't walk in and see the same exact scenarios. I mean, obviously, you know, what's the saying? History doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a lot of what trading is. Like, every day is different, but not completely different to the point where you're just completely lost every day. Like, it's the challenge of problem solving. Like, okay, what's going on today? What do I see? I get to really apply my mind and ways that I'd never done it before. Like, even working at a troubleshooting job in the steel industry, which we've talked about in the past. Like, I thought that was
high stakes.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get to the trading game and it's like every minute is like that. Whereas in the steel industry, it's just when everything breaks, then you're in that mode. But, you know, for 12 hours a day, sometimes you're just sitting with your feet up on the desk and things are chugging along and making money. You don't get very many of those in the trading world.
How do you deal with the emotions? It's because, you know, you can't push emotions down. You can't push them away. They're just there no matter what you try and do. Is it just having the process that helps you to control the emotions, or do you take a lot of diazepam or other?
Well, I would say that control is the wrong word. Mm. If you're trying to control your emotions, that means you're fighting them. When we talked to Rich, he gave us kind of like his methodology. And step one is going to be awareness. Step one is always awareness. Step two is going to be acceptance. And then step three is agency. So what that means is the first thing you have to start doing is really thinking and exploring where these emotions are coming from. Try to understand what they're there to protect you from. And then accepting that that's what they're there for. They have positive intent. Like, I tend to want to move my stops when trade starts to go in my direction. What's the positive intent there? The positive intent is to try to protect myself from loss. It's like, okay, so now that I've known that, now that I accept that, now I can go back and look and see what the actual stats are. And I can actually negotiate with myself. I can say, hey, look, you know, you're doing this to protect me, but really what you're doing is you're hurting the overall process, because now we're not capturing all these winners that we get stopped out at break even on. And when you can have like that kind of, it sounds foo-foo, but when you can have that kind of discussion with your subconscious to kind of negotiate with it, get him on board with what your plans are, I think that makes for a much, much more effective plan for trying to understand and work with your emotions.
So from the beginning of 2023 to right now at the end and the beginning of 2024, mm-hmm. is there anything, any major things that you feel that you've learned or mastered that's helped you over this year?
I would say I have a much better understanding of psychology after doing that series with Rich Friesen. That's been fairly eye-opening. And even when we first talked to him, you know, 3 years ago, he told us all this stuff, and I kind of approached it with an open mind, but I don't know that I necessarily fully embraced it at that point. I think once you start to see some of those results pay off, once you start to really understand yourself, and this goes beyond trading, which is what's really, I think, the crazy, interesting benefit throughout the whole thing. I've become a much better person over the last year just because I've been willing to explore myself, if that makes sense.
A better person in what way?
Like when I'm more honest, I'm more open when I'm like conversing with my friends and family, my wife, something, you know, if something bothers one of us and we need to have that hard conversation, I'm not as quick to run away from it like I used to be. More willing to engage and really just kind of think. And I think too about what other people's, when they get emotional, like what is the reaction stemming from? Why are they getting emotional at this? Because a lot of times they're involuntary, right?
That's right. I got to say, it's been a hard year right at this end. It's been a really,
oh, really?
Hard year. Yeah.
In what
Not
ways?
That I do any. Just in terms of the investing, it's been a bit hard because, you know, I invest on the Australian share market. Mm-hmm. I've been using a methodology. One of my guests, I may have talked about him before, but he's got a fundamental way of investing, and I've been following his trades. It's basically a follow trading system, and the Australian share market has just been so flat over the year. There's been a bit of up, it's been a bit of down, far less volatility in the US market, but the US market's ending the year, you know, I'm not sure what it's going to be like in early January because things change so much, but it's just been such an upward trajectory in the US.
And we're here, also coming up on an election cycle too, I think. So I wouldn't be betting against that anytime soon.
Yeah, but does that really have that much of an effect on markets?
I think it does. I have to go look really? And see what the correlation is, but I think it does.
God, you guys take so long to have an election. It takes years. It's like 6 weeks here, you know. It's just everything's going, and then 6 weeks it's called. That's when it all happens, and then you have the election, then it's over.
Let's see. The market has been favorable overall in 20 of the 24 election years from 1928 to 2020. Returns okay. Only four times.
Interesting.
Right?
Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Well, do you want to get tinfoil hat time?
Oh, yeah. Love a tinfoil hat. How many people are wearing tinfoil? How many people are wearing tinfoil hats these days? What's happened to the world?
I don't know, but man, it seems like what the.
Do you find that there are so many people now who are just, I'm not sure if it's conspiracy theories. This is both on the right and the left of politics, but it's just people have gone insane.
I think it's with the rise of the internet now. You can find a chat room anywhere for somebody who believes your crazy theories.
You know, or you can find someone else's crazy theories to subscribe to.
Right. You know, flat earthers. I think my daughter 1 year came home from high school, told me that she didn't believe in space. Like, no. No. Let's go grab the telescope. Space is real.
It is.
We're not playing that game in this house.
So I also was interested when you were doing those interviews with Rich, is it? Rich?
Rich Friesen, yeah.
Rich Friesen, yeah. That you're in Peoria.
Yeah.
Peoria, Illinois. I just always, when I was a child, my parents had a record collection, and one of the songs in their collection that I used to love was I Wish I Was in Peoria. Do you know that song?
No.
Oh, how I wish I was in Peoria tonight. Huh. Oh, how I miss the Goyles in Peoria. You got to say it like that, Goyles in Peoria tonight. Oh, you can pick a morning Gloria right off the sidewalks of Peoria.
That's anyway, not been my experience.
That's a really, really, really old song that's been covered so many times. The premise is these guys are on a ship that's sinking, you know, and as it's sinking and everyone's panicking, suddenly go, I wish I was in Peoria.
The center of the Illinois where there's no water except for the river.
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to be on a sinking ship in Peoria. What's Peoria like? What's it like to live there?
It's like going in a time capsule, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
If you lived in like a modern city and it's like going back 100 years, you see like all the old brick buildings from like when the industry was big here in like the 1880s to early 1900s. Like Peoria used to be a really prosperous town, and it's just kind of been on the downhill since then. There's aspects that I like. I like the kind of throwback feel of it, but it does sometimes kind of feel like you're driving into an apocalypse, ruins of like a major metropolitan sometimes. Not to pull some pictures and send them to you.
It has a lot of historic buildings, does it?
Oh, yeah. And then great Richard Pryor's from here.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Richard Pryor. What was that great line of his? You know, remember when he set himself on fire? cooking cocaine or something. And he said, I don't know what happened. I had a glass of milk. I had a cookie. I put the cookie in the milk. Kaboom.
Didn't he at the end of that special too flick a match and say this is an impression of himself running down the street and threw it?
Oh, no. what a comedian. But what industry is there? What keeps the economy going in Peoria?
Used to be Caterpillar. Caterpillar's got a really big presence here, but they tried to shift it to Chicago, and I'm not sure that if they're not still trying to get out now. Illinois has not been very favorable as far as taxes go, but they still have a big Caterpillar presence. Keystone, which was the steel mill I used to work at, now owned by Liberty, that's another big employer. There's a lot of actual industry out here. Just they've been around for 100 years and the buildings look like that.
So does it still have a main street, a high street there with lots of shops in it? Or is it still, you have to drive out of town to the box stores?
The Riverwalk is pretty nice. You can go walk along the Illinois River. They do a good job of keeping that vitalized. And they actually have like a lot of really cool stuff in the summertime, free concerts and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it a lot more than I liked Arizona. People are a little bit more friendly than they are there. Weather's more my speed. I like the colder better than the heat nowadays. Although, ask me that again in a couple of weeks when it snows. That's still the case.
Well, this can be one of our quixotic crusades, like revitalizing the theme song of Peoria, which I've just given to you.
Is that the actual theme song of Peoria? Because that's what it sounds like.
I think
like.
It should be. It should
sounds
be.
Like a, it sounds like a high school band song.
But then, of course, we've had another one of our failed crusades, and that's to promote Grace Stanky from Miss America.
I tried to go back and see if I can figure out how effective our campaign has been, because she's over 5,000 followers now, and I want to say she was significantly less 2000? Than that when we started.
Yeah, 2000 before we started, yeah. So just to remind listeners that Grace Stanky is the current reigning Miss America, and she's also a nuclear engineer, and she's doing a lot of work promoting nuclear power as a clean energy future. But she's studiously ignored us in our,
I know.
our campaign to promote her, especially on Twitter.
Especially after we doubled her since we last brought it up.
I mean, she's doing a great job going out there and canvassing for nuclear power. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but you've worked with nuclear haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think nuclear power sounds more complex than it actually is. It's really the same technology that we use with coal or similar. I mean, it's just a hot rock that makes steam and spins a turbine. Right. It's what do you do with the stuff after you've used it? That's the problem.
Well, must be able to do something. I mean, because Australia produces, I think we've got the largest uranium reserves in the world, possibly, or the second largest. And we actually export lots and lots of uranium.
We have a law against
whoever has nuclear reactors, I guess France, America, you know, lots of different places.
That's right. There's different grades too for that and weapons grade. So North Korea is probably not calling.
Oh, no, we sell them out the back door to North Korea and Iran. just joking.
Yes.
But we've got a ban against nuclear power here, and we've got one nuclear reactor, and that's for medical isotopes, just here in the suburbs of Sydney, in fact, you know. If you sort of say that, we've got a nuclear reactor here in Sydney in the suburbs, and, oh, really? We didn't know that.
Right.
Yeah, been there for about 50 years, no problems at all.
Right.
But it's, I don't know.
You don't it just hear seems about to make a lot of sense. Something- Yeah. You don't hear about them unless there's something really goes wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's always made sense to me, the idea of nuclear power. And I've got this fantasy, and there are some people who've been pushing that because Australia is vast with lots of empty spaces and geologically stable, that we should also start an economy, a lot of economic activity based on taking other people's nuclear waste and burying it in a very safe way, as well as exporting it and also world leaders in nuclear technology.
If we could ever get rocket ships to not blow up, just launch it to the sun, help, keep the sun going for a little bit longer. That'd be my plan. But what about fusion, though?
Yeah.
I mean, fusion's getting really close to being commercially viable. Is that okay with Australia? Would they allow one of those plants to operate?
Who knows? Who knows? People get scared about them whenever you say that nuclear. And the thing is about nuclear fusion, isn't the saying, it's always about 20 years from being ready to go?
Yeah, right. But I've seen some companies that say that they claim to be ready to be commercially viable and actually putting out usable amounts of power in the next couple of years. I don't believe them.
No, that's right.
It's nice to see that it's close.
But we do have a working system that does work. And, you know, as long as you don't put them on fault lines or in tsunami zones and maintain them well. I mean, even the worst nuclear disasters we've had, like Chernobyl, you know, you look at Chernobyl today and they've got very high levels, but there's a forest and there's animals in the forest and they all look sort of quite normal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
did you watch the documentary they did on that? Not the documentary, the miniseries that they made. It was
fictional
retelling. It was really good, but they way over dramatized the effects of some of the stuff that had happened there. Like, if you go back and read how actually damaging the event was, it's surprising how many people survived some of the stuff that they had to go through. I think things like that don't help when it comes to trying to promote it as, you know, something that's probably better for the environment than a coal plant or an oil or some of the other stuff we use. What's Australia's hang up? Like, why do you guys not allow it?
It's just been a long time political thing on the left of politics that it seemed to be, you know, very unsafe. It's always the current government say, oh, we can't go nuclear, even though in COP28 currently with the meeting, there's a lot of countries that have signed up to produce a lot more nuclear power. And Australia's still saying, oh, it's too expensive, it doesn't work. You know, we're going to be building offshore wind turbines and more solar panels.
Offshore
stuff,
so. Wind turbines are pretty solid, though.
Yeah.
You get pretty consistent wind out there, don't you?
Possibly somewhere. It's just more the transmission lines, because you've got to completely rebuild the transmission of power infrastructure. And these transmission lines have to go over people's properties as well. And so there's all that oversight that needs to be done, and the protests from local communities who don't want power lines going across their farmlands.
The people who think the magnetic radiation is going to affect their brains.
I don't think it's even tinfoil hat territory. It's just they don't want the power lines there. They're just ugly, and
I could see that.
You know, it's their land, and they have a right.
Especially in a place like Australia, where I assume that's like kind of like the big pride and joy is the pristine nature of your guys' country.
Yeah, that's right. They're building offshore wind turbines just off Newcastle, which is just north of Sydney, which is the largest coal port in the world. We export more coal from there. But one of the reasons why they're building it there is because the power stations are there, and the infrastructure exists. But, you know, I can't see the coal being stopped anytime soon.
It sounds like we need to change our strategy for grace and try to just get her to go to Australia and give some speeches.
I think maybe so. Yeah, yeah. Miss America does Australia.
Might but have I to mean, workshop that title.
Yes. Okay. But Miss America used to be a big thing, didn't it? I mean, it's obviously it doesn't capture the public imagination like it might have once in the past.
No, when you had four channels to watch, you know, 20 years ago, you're pretty limited on what you could actually, you know, pay attention to. Now you got so many options that we're starting to see that, you know, maybe network doesn't make the best stuff.
So tell me, in America, in a town like yours, how many people live in Peoria? How big is it?
Let me check. Somebody had asked me that before. I wanted to say it was like comparable to Tucson, but that probably doesn't help you.
Oh, how I miss
113. Yeah, it's about 100K.
Okay,
2020. Yeah. So that's in the metro.
Yeah. Do people get on well? I mean, we get this view overseas that America, everyone's at each other's throats. You know, you can't you can't have any kind of political discussions. You know, you don't. There's all those memes about, you know, what the uncle's going to say at Thanksgiving dinner.
I mean, everybody has one member of that family where they're just very opinionated and don't want to listen to anybody else. And politics, yeah, can be kind of a touchy subject, but I think in all honesty, you got 10% on either side that's like the vocal extreme, and then the other 80% lives in the middle and doesn't really care enough to engage. So you only ever hear, you know, the extremes. Those are the only people that ever make it on, the news segments or the... That's all they ever promote, because that's what gets the clicks. That's what gets people upset and angry. But I think the majority of people are just like us. They just want to live their life and don't want the government overstepping their reach. And, you know, leave me alone, I'll leave you alone.
So Peoria, you'd consider it middle America of sorts, of some sort, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Midwest.
People get on well with each other?
Yeah, for the most part. Trying to think if I've had any bad experiences. Not really.
Is it a safe place to live?
Depends on where, but that's going to be anywhere, right? You got your areas of town that you don't usually go to, unless you're feeling.
I find that really hard to conceive of. I mean, there's no place in Sydney that I would worry about going to. I mean, there's some, of course. You mightn't feel completely safe there, but really, it's.
Every time people say that, I've gone through some of those spots and. Like, you feel like a stranger. It almost sometimes feels like another world, but never actually felt in danger. But, I mean, I haven't been to some of the... Like, there's places in Detroit that I've heard where you get a flat tire, they'll pay for it. The city will, because they don't want you stopping. They want you to just get the fuck out of that place.
Yeah,
and they will not send repair crews to those streets.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's it's just hard to conceive of, you know? I feel so safe here in Sydney in comparison.
You'd think with as much wealth as this country has, there wouldn't be so much poverty, especially in so localized like that. I don't know. We do the best we can with what we got, right?
Yeah. Now, this is being released, like I said, after Christmas. What's your Christmas looking like?
Well, we had daughters come in for Thanksgiving. I think that was more of the bigger celebration. A lot of times my wife likes to put together like some type of like thing to do for the family, whether it be an escape room. Are you familiar with those? Do you guys have those in Australia?
What, the game? Like, it's a game where you have to escape out of the room. Yeah.
They have like actual places here where you can go where they set up an actual room.
We've got those. Got those as well. Yeah. Next to the axe throwing centers usually.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
They seem to go together, don't they?
Right. Especially with the drinking and the axe throwing.
Yeah, with a brewery next door as well.
Right.
Very well planned.
But so sometimes she'll do something like that, or she'll make a scavenger hunt. Or one year we did our own version of Taskmaster, which I think we talked about last time we spoke, and we got into that show. That one was a lot of fun. One of the ones I remember there was having to wear a blindfold and gloves and try to build a structure out of marshmallows and spaghetti noodles. And whoever got the tallest one got the most points.
Wow.
And so we recorded ourselves, like each of us, like we had to record ourselves doing it and then send it in to the judge. And watching the clip of yourself, like with blindfolds on and gloves, trying to build something where you have no sense of sight. You have no sense of feel. Just watching it like droop as I'm sitting there thinking it's up here.
So people in America tend to move a lot more than in other countries. So you're not from Peoria, are you? And your wife is not from Peoria. You've sort of come from other areas.
My wife was a lot more stationary than I was. She grew up in Phoenix and lived there for most of her life. I think she lived in Dallas for a little spell, but they went back pretty quick when she was like in her early teens, I think.
Yeah. And where were you brought up?
I was brought up in Houston. I grew up in Tucson. I lived in Bakersfield, California. Let's see, South Carolina, Chicago, New York, Memphis, Mississippi. Brief stay in Tennessee. I've been all over the place. So, but most of that was from the military. And without pensions and things like that anymore these days, there's no real incentive to stick around in one job for 40 years and put up with a bunch of bullshit because, there's everybody has the same plans. So I think people these days are a lot more apt or willing to jump ship and go move to another company if, the benefits are there. It's really, that's kind of the best way to get a pay raise in the States anyway. Go find
right. Okay.
Because otherwise you're getting 3% annual raises. If you go jump onto another company, you can get a 20% bump. So there's a lot more financial incentive to move, but it can be tough. Like, have you ever relocated?
No. I've lived in Sydney my whole life. And I remember the statistic that is it something like 90% of the Australian GDP is produced in 7 square kilometers of Sydney and Melbourne. So there's no incentive to move really, unless it's, if you work in the mining industry, of course, you'd go over to Western Australia and work there because there's a lot of wealth and the resources are over there. But basically for any other kind of job, you've got to be in Sydney and Melbourne. And of course, it's becoming a nightmare here because you've got the high mortgages now, rents are through the roof. It's becoming totally unlivable. It's absolutely insane what's going on here at the moment, and it just seems to be tinkering around the edges. There's not enough homes being built, not enough apartments being built, there's too much immigration at the moment, and that's taking away a lot of the accommodation.
That's funny that I thought Australia was really strict with their immigration.
We are
it's really hard to get a visa to come work there.
But it's, it doesn't take that many people to make a – I was just reading today that the target was like 250,000 people per annum on – these are temporary visas for people to work, and but it's doubled. It's more like 500,000. So I'd like to get a city the size of Canberra arriving in the last year without any new infrastructure and new housing in place. It's a big deal. And because
how many people are in Sydney now?
About 5 million, something like that.
Yeah, so it's about the size of probably Phoenix or one of those big US cities.
Yeah. No, it's a big city. And of course, there's all that, the thing where no one wants to have any new development in their backyards. There's still a lot of sprawl, still a lot of very large places with, one or two people living in them.
Right.
So it's been a combination of factors, and I I really think it's a consequence of what happened during the COVID mess up and lockdowns and everything, because it's a similar situation in the UK, similar situation mm-hmm. in Canada and a lot of other places like that. So I don't know. I do worry about, you know, like my kids and, you know, how they're going to survive. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well,
anyway, don't we get too depressed?
Yeah, let's bring it back to Christmas. I want to know what you guys do in Australia. Do you have any different traditions there?
Well, it's the height of summer here. So.
Yes, that's what I was wondering about that.
So the traditions are, yes, we still have Christmas puddings and we still have turkeys, and my mother insists of having a turkey each year. So
when
we've
you
got
say
that,
Christmas then, pudding, what does that mean? Because that's not what
it's an English,
we call
it's
pudding.
An English thing. No, Christmas pudding's an English thing. It's like a fruitcake of some sort, very, very rich fruitcake.
But it's like more like a bread almost, right?
Wouldn't say a bread, no,
or
because
cake.
It's very more of a cake.
Be
yeah, very moist cake. Usually brandy in it as well. It's a very English kind of tradition.
So what do they call what we call pudding? Like if you see what we call like those little Jello snack cups, they're just like a chocolate liquid.
Oh, what do we call those? Jellos, I guess, something like that. Yeah, no, it's not. That's not a. That's not that kind of pudding. But then, of course, to counteract that, there's lots of salads, there's lots of beer, and lots mm-hmm. of seafood.
Seafood.
So I live. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
my
definitely.
Style.
Prawns. Oh, shrimp. Mm. You call them shrimp, but prawns, oysters, and mm-hmm. I live very close to Sydney fish markets here. So one of my personal traditions is to go on my push bike in the middle of the night, because they're open for 24 hours a day for the few days before Christmas, and stock up on prawns, oysters, a few things to put on the barbecue or the barbie, as we call it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's a dozen oysters run you guys out there? If you're getting them raw in the half shell.
Well, in Australian dollars, it's about $25 for a dozen oysters, which would be, I'd say, about $16, somewhere around about $15-16.
Seems pretty comparable then. Okay, you guys aren't getting cheap oysters at least.
Yeah. Oh, so you understand the idea of raw half oysters in the shell.
Oh, I love them. Except I like a little bit of horseradish, dab mm-hmm. a cocktail sauce Ooh. On it, and then I eat it with a cracker.
Yeah, that's... With a cracker.
I like the cracker. I like the texture that it gives with it.
Because I was at a function one night, and there were a lot of Americans there, and they were handing out the oysters, and they were looking at them in absolute disgust.
I know, right? Try them. They're delicious.
Yeah. So you're the first American I've met who's actually – well, I'm sure there must be other that would eat the raw half-shell oysters. But these
dad
people,
taught me the joy of that.
Yeah, but these people, they were just – And so they had to be taken back to the kitchen, put under the grill.
No,
and grill.
And make them Rockefeller. Ruin them.
They were talking about Louisiana style, so I'm not sure what Louisiana style is.
Is that like with the cheese on them? That's because I think that's what the Rockefeller is. Like they bake them with a little bit of cheese on top.
Yeah, no, raw oysters. They're fantastic. Absolutely, absolutely.
What about you guys? I love getting crawfish when the season's in, but you guys call them, I think, mm-hmm. yabbies?
Yabbies, yeah. Yeah, that's
Are those
right.
big
yeah.
out there, big boils that you
not
do
really.
No?
No, not really. No, no, nah. I've never taken off.
Dang.
I mean, you can get yabbies, but I don't know. We've got a thing called Balmain bugs. I actually live in a suburb called Balmain, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like little lobsters, I guess.
Yeah.
They kind of look like trilobites, you know, like a fossil almost.
Good word.
Yeah. And they're delicious. They're absolutely delicious as well. So, yeah, often get a few bugs as well. But
I got to thank you for turning me on to that History of English podcast.
Oh, fantastic. You've been enjoying it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wife and I listened to I think we binged about like 15 or 20 of them while making dinners for a while there. To go back, there's so many like really crazy nuances about language that you never would have thought about. Like the way they're able to piece together an old extinct language, because they noticed in like these three like ancient ones, they all have like similar words for wheel or for cows. Like, now we can figure out what location they came from. They're likely here because we know that there's these types of animals were here. The forensics they can do with it's fascinating.
I know. And that idea that, because we're talking about Proto-Indo-European languages, which is where most of the languages in Europe came from, and also Sanskrit in India came from similar roots. But there was one episode where he was talking about when, I think it had to do with chariots, didn't it? The people who brought the language, because chariots became such a an effective weapon of mass conquest that they took the chariots and the language with them.
Right.
And when they were heading westward into Europe and hit the Carpathian Mountains, some charioteers went to the north and some went to the south. The ones who went to the north, their language turned into the Germanic languages, and the ones who went to the south turned into Greek and Latin. Only to be all reunited later, many years later in history, and, you know, ending up in the melange that is the English language.
So fascinating. I think that was another really cool one. I was reading up on onomatopoeia a while ago, and I think I think I remember reading sneeze is actually a form of that, because the original version of the word had a K in front of it. So if you pronounce it with the K, it kind of sounds like you're sneezing, because sneeze.
Yeah, and that with the K, of course, gives it more of that that Greek sound as well. Mm. Yeah, I was just being yesterday we had a bit of a family day, because we've got, you know, several families and some go away at Christmas. So we had a bit of a Christmas thing yesterday. And there's a suburb, the suburb in Sydney where I grew up, which is a very Greek area. And we got the bigatza from there, which is this Greek, beautiful, beautiful Greek dessert. And
what's it called?
Bigatza.
Bigatza. I'm going to have to look
that one up. B-U-G-A-T-S-A. And just so cheap, you know, and you go to this deli next door to it as well, and you get these huge chunks of beautiful Greek cheeses and beautiful olives and all sorts of things. And you come out of it and you've spent under $100, you know, and you've got food to feed five or six people.
I used to love like some of the Mexican places I used to get when I lived in Tucson. There's a little stand called Nico's Tacos where you can get, it was $5 20 years ago. I'm sure the price has gone up now. $5 for two beef chimichangas, and these things were almost a pound each.
What are they? What's a chimichanga?
It's like a burrito, but it's deep fried.
Yeah.
Like the outside of it. Oh, so it's nice and crispy. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, one of those, like I could barely finish one. I got two of them in this thing for $5. Like, are you kidding me?
Although we've got so much Asian influence here. So, you know, we've got Chinese restaurants, Indonesian restaurants, Thai restaurants, especially Thai. There's so many Thai restaurants.
I wish I liked Thai food more. I don't care for the sweet and the spicy. I love the spicy stuff that they have, but they put a lot of coconut milk in a lot of their stuff.
Yeah. Not into that?
Not necessarily. Although I do like their Thai iced teas. Those are I can feel myself getting fatter drinking them, but they're so good.
That's right. Well, actually, their coconut water drinks are beautiful as well.
Oh yeah.
I've seen coconut water. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're beautiful. Yeah. Lots of hydrolytes. Good for replenishing after sweating a lot, which you mightn't be doing this summer or this Christmas.
Right. Maybe. Hopefully not.
Got any plans for 2024?
I mean, we just made our big changes. So I think the next couple months are going to be just kind of taking stock of how they're doing and seeing if anything needs tweaked. I'd still like to at some point do another mini series on fundamental analysis. But I don't know. There's so much that you can only spend so much of your time on so many things. And with the option series and then futures, like sometimes it's too much.
Yeah.
So I may actually just try to take some more time and focus on one thing rather than being too spread out.
Yeah, spread it out too much. So how are you finding it with when you're dealing with listeners? Are you dealing with listeners and other people who are coming on board and talking about it? Is there a community group as well?
Oh, yeah. We have a Discord where
We
merged with our friends over at Vonta Trading. They're the two of the panelists that regularly appear on the show now. They have a paid room where they offer educational services and mentorships and other amazing stuff, town halls and stuff like that. And then we operate the free side of that. So we put together events. We've got a coding workshop that we're trying to put together for people who want to learn how to build their own studies or make use of ChatGPT to help them write some Python scripts to do backtesting. We do M period challenges on Fridays so we can get people together to The idea is to not fuck up your Friday. So go into sim mode and we'll play for some prizes, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And how are you finding people are reacting? I mean, when you're talking on Discord and the community, what are the kind of people, what are they, their expectations? What are they looking for?
It's been great, actually. I think the expectation is just to have the honesty. Like you said, with your experiences, like there's so many shysters and people out there just trying to make a buck. I mean, it's just refreshing to hear somebody say like, hey, here's how I lost a bunch of money when I was in your shoes. And this is what I did and what I learned from it. Being able to provide those kinds of conversations, I think the reaction's been phenomenal. And the engagement's been getting much, much better. People are, you know, writing in, suggesting guests to get on the show now. It's been really fun watching it kind of like come together, and it's been really starting to take off over the last year.
Oh, you had Carl on, didn't you? Was it Carl that came on? Oh no, Casey. Sorry, Casey Stubbs.
Casey Stubbs. Yeah.
Yep. Nice
and
guy.
I did his show too. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. He's a nice guy and another very honest person as well. I think that's the key to this is, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say that they're shysters. I mean, you did use the word shysters, but obviously
they're
trying
to. There's some out there. I'm not going to name names, though.
there's nothing, but they want to make money out of selling an educational product. Mm-hmm. But really, there is so much that you need to understand, and I really commend you guys for what you're doing in terms of being basically honest about it, like we've been saying. I mean, honesty is the key word to this, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's tough for, you know, the poor guy that's trying to learn because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what's good information or what's bad information. That's part of what we're trying to accomplish with our community, is to be able to point people to resources and things like, you know, like we've talked to how many people over the years that we, you know, you can tell when you get a guy that really genuinely cares. Like, I'm more than happy to point people to their stuff. Like, hey, check out this guy. Like, he talks about the kinds of things that I think he sounds like you're interested in. Like, I like doing that kind of stuff. I like trying to connect people to point them in the direction of places where they can find good information and not get taken advantage of.
And that's the thing. They're being taken advantage of often because, you know, people have got dreams. Money means dreams and realizing these dreams. And sometimes these people selling educational products, that's exactly, they just, you know, their hands are going right into people's minds and they know exactly which little switches to, which buttons to press and which switches to pull and emotionally get people sucked in and can often not be a very good outcome for users.
That's something Rich told us when we first met him, is that he said he doesn't use his powers for evil, but if he wanted to. He says he knows how to do it, how to be that guy.
It's
exactly what he said. You find out what that person wants, and then you try to sell it to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. If you're seeing those words on the screen when you're researching something that says basically everything that you want to happen, maybe take a second look, because that may be a bunch of empty promises.
Oh, that's a great way to, that's a great thing. I hope that's a takeaway that someone can have from this particular episode, that, you know, you've got to understand what you want, what your goals are. It's all that old financial planning advice, which is so cliched, but you really need to know yourself, know what you want, know what your needs are, know what you need to do to keep your money safe as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good point to say. Goodbye and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, even though by the time this comes out, that'll all have been happening. Hopefully have happened. We have time traveled.
Hopefully all the New Year's resolutions are still intact.
Oh, God, New Year's resolutions. And hopefully we've got world peace. We've got nuclear power. We've got clean energy.
Grace Stanky over there rallying the troops.
Shout out to Grace.
Sydney.
Yeah. And the history of English, that the more we know it, the better we can use it.
There you go. Yeah, well said. Well, thanks for having me on, Phil. This has been a very nice break from the typical conversations I have to do. It's always fun chatting with you because you never know where we're going to go.
Yeah, that's right. It's been really good to have this chat, you know, because I was just saying to my wife this morning before I came in, I haven't prepared a thing for this conversation, but I don't know. I just feel like this is a nice way to have a little holiday.
I had a couple ready to go just in case.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, we've managed to nearly fill up the hour. So, yeah. Kyle, great to see you again.
And Phil, you have a great, great holiday, man. I hope hope it's not too hot. Maybe you get a freak snow and you can build a snowman or a sandman.
Well, luckily we've got about hundreds of beaches here in Sydney, so that's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, okay. Think of me then.
Okay, signing off.
Thanks for listening to Stocks for Beginners. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.